You know, human beings present 0.25% of all the world's CO2. A great deal of the CO2 is being put up by methane hydrates, and the methane hydrate surge is tied directly to the approach, as I mentioned before, of the dwarf star, Heraclius, the destroyer, all kinds of ancient names for it, and the planetoids around it, including one that the people have called Nibiru that was in the ancient, if you want to call it, carvings on the stones and so on in Sumeria and Egypt. I had a two-hour program today for the first 2 hours with Bob Fletcher, and he, after chasing around all the corruption...
Bob is back. Wow, I had Bob on the program 22 years ago. That's amazing.
Yeah, he's been at it a long time. He put out a new DVD series at 4 hours, and I talked about it today. We compared notes, and of course, everything matches up exactly about the underground cities and the quadrillions, not trillions, but quadrillions of dollars spent, not only just in America, but around the world. And they're preparing for something a lot worse than a nuclear war or an airborne plague. They want martial law, and the only way they can have it, the only way, and I've said this before, and probably I'm the only one that says this, is to have a plague with the population collaborating because of the plague, to have tracker chips. The World Health Organization takes over all health care.
What are we talking about? Meteor? Asteroid?
We're talking about the approach. The closest it'll arrive from my calculations and research,
red dwarf,
is 55 million miles from Earth. But its effect on the sun and on the planets will be catastrophic. And
that's
one of the
red
biggest
dwarf.
Things that's going to happen
is
a disjunction between the lithosphere and the mantle. And you'll see a lithospheric disjunction that'll move the crust of the Earth on the actual plane of the mantle. And it doesn't have to be even that high an earthquake, but it can move it over, let's say, 1.3 miles per hour. And over 2 months, that'll move at 1,200 miles.
All right. Hold on, Bill. We've got to pause.
So
we'll come right back.
Start being prepared for the fact that something coming a lot worse than a nuclear war.
All right.
The globalists are preparing for it underground. And they want martial law, and they want most of us gone.
Yeah. Well, we will
be
gone. So
we can interfere with their survival. That's
Don't
what
worry
the real
about it.
Issue.
We'll be right back. Hang on. Okay, and we're back talking to all of you good people all around the world, wherever you are, and Dr. Bill, who is here once a week for an hour, to share some of his knowledge and wisdom and speculation. I cannot tell you I have any hard and fast scientific documentation to back this up, but we can listen and get his view on the red dwarf. What is it, Bill? And where
well,
is it?
Let me give you some background. It's first-hand, second-hand. If you look at our galaxy, and this is astrophysics, a regular star, a yellow dwarf star, will take 10 to 15 billion years to burn out. So we have about another 10 billion years for the star to burn out completely and become a white dwarf star. Larger stars, we call blue giants, can burn out really quickly in 100 million years or half a billion years. When you make a red dwarf, because it burns only at 5 degrees above absolute zero, and you can see it by infrared telescope and X-ray telescope, these can be much more compressed in terms of their massiveness. So they can be maybe 10 or 20% of the mass of our sun or smaller.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But the magnetic field is up to 200 times or stronger, and they generate a very powerful X-ray, as well as they generate a lot of infrared lights. You can see them in infrared spectra, but they don't have the same type of nuclear corona that you see in a regular star. Because most people think that the nuclear reactions happen in the center of the sun. And I've interviewed Professor McCanny. I've done my own research. The heat of the sun is created in a corona outside the sun, not in the center of it. And what happens is this star is very common, this type of star type, a red dwarf star, because it lasts, because it burns so slowly, will take anywhere from 10 to 100 trillion years to burn out.
Huh.
Okay? So long after our galaxy is gone, in terms of a spinning disk, if it hasn't been accreted into the central black hole, there are rogue red dwarf stars circulating throughout the entire galaxy. For every regular star, there's probably 10,000 brown and red dwarf stars floating in our galaxy. Most of them are tied to a hyper elliptical orbit with a star system. So they're part of a trinary or binary star system. And what happens when they return, if they come in a different ecliptic than the regular planets, they're very disruptive, because what they do is they have polar effects on most of the stars that have nuclear reactors as their core. For example, Venus and the Earth are actually nuclear reactors. Otherwise, like Mars, which is not a high isotope planet, its core solidified at 1.5 billion years after its formation, which is why it lost its atmosphere and its water.
Well, so who put the valve up there?
the valve. Oh, that was probably put up by ancient beings or people. Could have been even us. We actually may be, if you want to call up ancient Martians or
that's what I'm another, saying. I said that earlier. It could be.
Yeah, I'm just speculating, but I'm telling you, this is not speculation. When I'm talking about the astrophysics of blue or red dwarf stars. Now, here's firsthand information. I took care of the team that went down in the mid 90s to McMurdo Bay from Colorado Springs. That's where they're based, from Colorado Springs. And they were down there looking for this red dwarf. They had a Pi Meson telescope under the ice shelf, which is looking for Pi Mesons from space. They're in neutrinos. They also had a the SPT, South Pole Telescope, radio telescope. And it was a multinational project where they're looking for the entry of this object. And the first person that suggested there was perturbations of the outer planets was Tycho Brahe, who was a Danish astronomer over 100 years ago. And everyone, including Velikovsky, have written on this, and they've talked about the fact of the cataclysmic universe. But if you read through the lines of the ancient books, whether it's the Dogon of Africa, the high priests of South Africa, you know, like the Chitahuri, you talk about the Naga, you talk about the ancient Bhagavad Gita in India, the Bible, every ancient book talks about cataclysmic return. The cataclysmic return that happened with Moses was taught to him by the high priest because he was supposed to be the next pharaoh. And they all knew this. All the ancient societies
knew. Big movie coming out about Moses.
Yeah, it's going to be incorrect because their viewpoint, of course, is directed by people that are either agnostics or really don't see the big picture here. Moses was a super genius. Moses was not. He was a qualified physician and surgeon. He was a qualified if you want to call it astronomer, and astrologer, because they understood the proper star signs that were actually embedded in the universe to explain to mankind the nature of what the world was.
Okay.
And we're talking about the ancient star signs that we don't commonly learn today. Okay? I've gone over this with great detail with Jonathan Gray, who's done the research to prove this. And he has an ebook on it at beforeus.com. If you actually look back and look at these star signs, and this is firsthand, not secondhand, they were investigating the return of this, because they had estimated it might be as far away as 50 or 60 years hence, back in the early 80s, like 2030, 2040. And what they've recalculated is that the return of some of these hyper-elliptical comets, like the ones that have come in the last few years from deep space, from the Oort cloud, they're being pushed in by this hypermassive red dwarf star and its accompanying orbiting objects. One of them is referred to as Nibiru, okay? Because they have planetoid objects that are circulating around the star. And it's estimated that a good planet number of the, quote, planets where there may be long-lived civilizations may actually be orbiting very close to a red dwarf. In other words, those civilizations may be much more likely to last billions of years because a red dwarf star can last trillions. You follow me?
Yeah, I'm right there. Go ahead.
Right. So now what's happening is this object comes in, it creates three basic things. It increases volcanism and earthquakes. It increases solar activity and coronal mass ejections.
Right.
It increases gravitonic effects as it passes closer, even though it's only going to be closest juncture.
55 million
miles away. It was caused what's called a lithospheric disjunction with the mantle. Now, the most, and I was told this by guys who were actually working on the tunneling machines, making the underground cities firsthand, not second. I was one of their doctors. Okay. That the reason why what their favorite place to build underground cities was in dormant magma domes. And the dormant magma domes would occur when these cataclysmic disjunctions of the lithosphere, the crust, would move over the mantle and the feeder from the, just like an artery, the feeder to feed that volcano was no longer there. So it hollowed out over millions of years. And they were anywhere between 4 and 12+ cubic miles in size, anywhere from 1.5 miles to 4 or 5 miles down. And their next favorite was to actually make tunnels. And the guy that I took care of, they investigated in the Baja California. The walls of the tunnel were like obsidian glass, like azure debris glass, just like the ones we make now. They weren't like the tunnel. And they estimated when they did some radio dating that those tunnels were between 300,000 and 500,000 years old. Okay?
Wow.
This is done by scientists.
Mm-hmm.
So what you need to understand is
how come we can't go see any of these tunnels?
Well, first off, unless you're like me, get a Q-level security clearance and you take care of the people who actually work on it, you're not going to ever know. And they're going to invite you. They're going to recruit you in because you have a special skill set they need for you to do something.
Now, you've seen these.
Well, I haven't been in the tunnels, but I've been in the underground city at Falcon.
Okay.
I have been in the underground city at Falcon, Colorado. Yes, I have. I've been through the quantum array of the actual virtual world supercomputer, the Cray Ray. I've been actually walking through a ray physically myself. I have been there. Okay, this is not secondhand. This is firsthand.
Got it.
So what people need to understand, what I'm telling them, is very matches up exactly with people like, Bob Fletcher said, and it's in his new DVDs. It fits exactly with a lot of people. The people think, well, you're crazy. You can't know that. I took care of the security employees working on Denver International Airport years before it opened, and the people that were involved with construction for years before it opened, and they moved more debris, this is a quote from them, than when they built the first Panama Canal.
That's really astonishing.
It's astonishing. And at the time when it was peak, and remember, this took decades.
I remember when they were building DIA, the local residents were saying, where the hell are they getting all this stuff, and where are they taking
it? Right. And they were trucking in. At one point, they were using 80% of the Portland cement that was manufactured on the planet.
Wow.
80%.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah. I remember.
Yeah. Right. You remember. Now, I took it to the security officers. The first hand were there.
Mm-hmm.
And would tell me in exquisite detail, and I cross-checked my data with other people working in the facility because I was their doctor. Okay? This is not secondhand information.
Right. Got it.
So when I piece it all together, including what I saw firsthand and what I was told when I was working, taking care of employees working at Space Command and elsewhere and other classified projects, the real issue, and this is where Bob Fletcher was, he started chasing bad guys and criminals and corruption, and he ended up finding out that the real issue is, where's all those trillions of dollars of money so that we protect the drug trade in Afghanistan? We've got trillions of dollars coming in from that. We have slush funds. We have all kinds of corrupt things, armaments and, you know, toy companies like his toy company being taken over so they can ship armaments around the world. Why are they not fixing Fukushima? Because it serves their purposes. They're softening up the population for an airborne plague. It's not Ebola. I've told people this over and over again. Ebola is simple dimple to take control of. But it won't be so simple if they have something like what killed my grandmother's brother and sister. My grandmother told me this story. She was at the time in the Glasgow, Nova Scotia, and she lost her sister with the flu of 1918. And the brother wanted to hold her before they closed the casket and put her in the ground. And a week later, she was there at the funeral with her brother as well, dead in the ground. So it's personal to me. And it tells me that having worked with the FBI and CDC on Operation Top Off and Dark Winter, and then meeting with them again in March of 2001 and asking direct questions for over an hour and a half,
Right. They're
preparing for an airborne super plague that's not Ebola. That's the warm-up. That's the tag, you know, and then the right cross.
Well, we had SARS and...
Yeah, these are all just warm-ups. And I know these specific characteristics of an airborne plague that'll be bad. It won't be Ebola where... If you're sitting right beside somebody and they vomit in your face and they're in the 2 days away from the hospital and dying, you're going to get Ebola on the aircraft. But I'm talking about a virus that's so infectious, you can be standing 50 yards away and someone sneezes, and then you're going to get the flu. And this flu may not have a case fatality rate of 80%. Maybe it's 25%.
Plenty.
But yeah, or 20%. But what will happen is when you get it, you're going to be damaged permanently afterwards.
Yeah.
And it'll spread 300 to 400 times faster. And there'll be almost no way for them to stop it.
Correct.
What I'm saying is that they're getting ready with Fukushima because they want to soften and weaken the population. Their immune systems are failing. I talked a few years ago to one of my good friends, Dr. Aristo Vujadani, who's the head of immunosciences in Los Angeles. I've known him for 30 years. We started doing research on toxicology in 1981, 33 years ago. I was sending bloods down from Calgary, Alberta, where I practiced.
Wow.
To Aristo Vujadani at UCLA when he was a senior PhD student, and Dr. Chung. They were working together on the team, and we were doing studies in toxicology of out-of-body workers, and I was contributing blood samples to that study. What people need to understand is I come from a background with scientific and technical and classified access that no other single human being on Earth has, and what I'm telling them is not BS. They're preparing for us to have a super plague so they can have martial law. They want to absolutely have to have martial law before the return of this object, because they don't want us to interfere with their survival when they go underground. Period. And what's coming is a lot worse than a nuclear war or an airborne plague.
Yeah.
They're preparing for something far more
cataclysmic. There's going to be a lot of dead meat packages laying on the ground here.
Right.
Lots.
And people don't believe this. They think, we're just making this up. Now, there will be survivors on the ground, too, because I don't think going underground is necessarily the optimal thing. There'll be survivors, and there'll be little pockets.
There always
but
will
if
be.
You're near a big, if you're in a big city, if you don't have yourself prepped and self-quarantined when the real airborne plague comes, like the 1918 plague, only worse, if you don't have yourself personal protection equipment and nutraceuticals because the medical system will be gone. In fact, just a few dozen cases could destroy the healthcare system in America next year. I mean,
that's
destroy
right.
it.
That's right.
And there isn't advice to destroy it. I mean, no self-respecting nurse or doctor will show up in an emergency.
They're going to go to work. Hospitals
they won't go to
are
work
shut
if they
down.
Think they're going to get Ebola.
Yeah.
They're not
going
to go to work if they know that
no chance.
A dozen more cases show up.
I think we've got to go, Bill, but I'm pretty sure we have Ebola cases stashed away around the country.
Oh, yeah. Just, and the thing is, if they admit it, their hospital goes bankrupt.
That's right.
I mean, that's just business.
Well, we got one here in the town near me, and not a word about that in the last 2 days can I find. No test results.
They've made a collaboration to say, we're not going to talk about this anymore until we... And even if they confirm
they,
it...
They take them out of here, you know, put them in somewhere. There's some central location right now where they're taking these people. I don't know.
Well, they move... Well, they're probably here, and I know this is typically what they do. They take them out of a regular... You know, hospital to a military hospital, or stash them in some facility they've amped up to say this is a biosafety hospital.
They've got one somewhere around here. All right, we're out of time. Thank you, Bill. As always, talk to you next week. You be safe, be careful. And,
yeah,
and
by the way, look up that article I have posted up here about the USS Soldiers and the Reagan. They actually run the right to their class action.
Did you
lawsuit.
Send that to me?
Yeah, I will send that to you. I'll put that in an email. That's all there, including the lawyers, their contacts, everything.
Yeah, yeah.
People can dig up all the information on it.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much. Take care. Be well.
Yeah, take care. Take action. Believe this. This is not made up to be late sci-fi. This is
We're not playing games.
I'm not playing any games at all. It's life and death.
Nope. All right.
Life
See ya.
And death.
Okay, that's hour number two. We got to take a break. We'll be right back with Patty Doyle and Dr. Hal Strunk in just a couple of minutes.